guest podcast of CeedSaying.com. I am your host, Artie Kulik, and it is that time of the year, fresh off of her croissant-having, cheese-eating, surrender-monkeying with the French. It's the greatest other host on the right side of the Mississippi River, and that's Tina. How are you today, Tina?
I'm good, thank you.
So do you think the French appreciate whenever I call them surrender monkeys and say they'd be the smallest speaking German province in the Nazi Empire or whatever?
Well, they wouldn't be the smallest one because, no. Like, France is pretty big.
Yeah, Britain would be the smallest one.
Well, Austria, Czechoslovakia.
Which I just want to say off the top, I don't believe any of that stuff. Anybody that does, you can go watch the awful, terrible Napoleon movie and see that French used to kick butt.
Also, they helped us kick butt.
Yes, they. Well, yeah. There would be no us without that.
That's right.
All right, so the
USA.
Yeah,
USA.
Yeah. What's the whole song the British were singing after they lost Yorktown? I know it's in the Hamilton musical, but it's
the
a true story. Yeah,
sorry,
yeah, the world turned upside down. Yeah, that's the French. That's the Marquis de Lafayette.
De Lafayette.
Not the Marquis de Parkway West.
It's the Marquis de Lafayette, no. Not the Marquis de Lafayette.
So I should like the French a hell of a lot.
Philistine.
More. Yep. All right. At the top here, it's I casually pop in and out. You watch these things. Usually we have, you have your TV. The boy has his, our son has his TV. I have my TV. And then we have a communal TV.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're ever watching on the communal TV, I'll be, oh, I'll check this out, see what's going on. I had something to do on Sunday. So I saw like the first bar, I saw Sinner go up 2-0. And I went to go do my thing, which was a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back up and Alcaraz had pulled it 2 sets each. And we'll talk about what happened in a moment because I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to let you talk about it. And I sat and I watched the entire final set. And this is where I'll start. A lot of people are saying the greatest match ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're saying that in the Federer-Nadal-Wimbledon final that ended in the dark, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the year after the year? I think it was the year after. When Federer,
erotic match,
yeah,
yep, and then there was the Federer Djokovic 2017 final, mm-hmm, that was the first one that went to tiebreak at 12 games all, mm-hmm, in the fifth set.
And that's, yeah, what I was going to say. The Roddick one in particular is never going to happen again. Didn't Federer win like 15-13 in the final set or something like
that? The Federer 2008,
yeah,
Nadal match went 6-8 in the fifth set,
yeah,
and then the Federer Djokovic match in 2019, that one was the year that Wimbledon was saying, okay, we're going to play a tiebreaker when we get to 12 all in the fifth set. And that happened.
Mm-hmm. So we'll never have that again.
Nope. Because they've all standardized.
Yeah.
Deciding set, tiebreaker 1-10.
So like living tiger in the moment, and I'm going to let you describe this. Tell me, and I'm not saying this is your opinion, but tell me why people are saying this is the greatest match ever.
I mean, first of all.
And before I go on, I don't know if Jannik Sinner will say it is, but go ahead.
I think looking back on it, right, Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz both played amazingly well, which is one of the reasons that people are saying this about this match, right? That it's one, I don't know that it's the best ever, but it's probably in the top 10 of tennis matches that I've seen. Yeah, so Sinner went up 2-0. It's really hard to come back from 2-0.
And it was 6-4 and 7-6, so it's not like he was smoking. I mean, he's getting a break on him.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And even 7-6 is a tiebreak, right? Mm-hmm. So, no, it was a well-played match, but Sinner just kind of had the edge. Alcaraz, a lot of his shots are touch. His drop shot was kind of off. He was dumping drop shots into the net, hitting wide. And, you know, when we get to the women's final, we'll talk a little bit about what an unforced error is. But yeah, it was a closely played match, and Alcaraz pulled out the third set, sent it to 4. I'm thinking, okay, I mean, sure, winning one set, but now he's got to win 3 in a row, essentially, to win this match. And Sinner is not Zverev, right? He's not going to choke. An outstanding player in his own right. He is as good as Alcaraz. By the numbers, he's better, right? By the rankings, he's better. And Sinner managed to be up a break, right? And then served. Sinner was up a break. The score was 5-3. Alcaraz was serving. And Sinner had love 40 in the fourth set. So he had triple championship point on Alcaraz's serve. Alcaraz won the next 5 points to hold serve, right? And then you realize he's still down a break. Sinner now gets to serve for it at 5-4, and Alcaraz broke him back, which by itself was amazing, right? But just after Alcaraz held his serve, he just strutted right over to the chair like, I got this. It was like his body language is wild, right? Managed to win that set, right? And then was up a break in the fifth set. And then late Sinner got the break back. And then, you know, Sinner was up 6-5. Alcaraz had to hold serve to push it into a tiebreaker. They went to the 10-point tiebreaker. And Alcaraz won the first 7 points of the tiebreaker. He just locked in, you know, and just ran away with the tiebreaker. It was, and Sinner didn't play badly. Alcaraz just, I don't know what, like, it was almost like a Djokovic-like tiebreaker where he just doesn't miss, you know? And even match point, Sinner didn't play a bad point on match point. Alcaraz hit the short ball. Sinner came in. He hit an aggressive shot, and Alcaraz hit it behind him, threaded the needle right behind him. And you could tell that as soon as he hit the ball, Alcaraz knew it was a winner. Because in one motion, he finished the swing and collapsed on the court before the ball had even landed in the court. I mean, it was incredible. I think you came in right as a tiebreaker was starting. Is that right?
I saw almost the whole first or fifth set.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, or most of it.
Okay.
I think I saw it. I know I saw it from the point where I almost said Nadal, where Alcaraz had taken the break, but then Sinner had gotten back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I saw all that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was just a high quality match. It was 5.5 hours, and Sinner had that triple championship point like an hour and a half before the match actually ended, which props to him for getting back in it. I would have just mentally folded at that point, right? And a lot of people way better than me would have mentally folded at that point. So,
I mean, youth does have its advantages. What, Alcaraz is 22 and Sinner's 23?
Yep.
So
you don't have as much scar tissue.
You don't.
What the interesting thing is coming into these things, right? Alcaraz was 4-0 in major finals and Sinner was 3-0. Somebody was going to lose their first major final.
Well, we'll talk more about it later about what, I mean, are these the only two men that are going to win for the next 5 years or something? Before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about it. I wanted to say this from a layman's point of view. Every time I've seen Sinner play, like, I don't see the guy miss. He always gets the ball deep, but it's always in bounds. You have to beat him. You have to get a ball past him to win.
Yeah.
He's not going to screw it up himself.
Yeah. So what makes this an interesting matchup to me is that I think Sinner's average level, it's like baseline level is higher than Alcaraz's, but Alcaraz's top level is slightly higher than Sinner's.
Well,
Alcaraz plays creatively. Mm-hmm. Sinner doesn't have that kind of creative, unpredictable streak to him. Sinner just, he does what he does and he does it extremely well.
Well, Alcaraz is going to hit 5 to 10 impossible shots a match.
Yeah.
And you can't beat that.
Right. And Sinner's going to keep blasting you deep into the corners and not putting you in a position to win.
I mean, I'll say, and I think a story is always
the thing is Alcaraz could hit 5 or 10 impossible shots, but he also might do something dumb.
Well, there right? is that. No, there is. He's gonna, and I don't like this dude as a person, but I say it from a comparison. He's like Brett Favre, or no, better yet, he's like Patrick Mahomes. Okay. Patrick Mahomes is going to pull a pass out or something. He's going to jump in the air and do like a jump shot pass and hit a guy perfectly.
Yeah.
And you just can't beat that.
Yeah.
And he's the only guy that can do that. Nobody in the NFL can do that.
And more than that, he's the only person that would think of doing
it.
Right. Yeah. And that's how Alcaraz is. Like, Alcaraz sees shots that other players don't think of as an option.
Mm-hmm. So it was on display. And I think both of them.
And he loves it. You could tell he is an entertainer. He wants people.
Well, it's here in Cincinnati. We have for at least another year here, Ellie De La Cruz, who he goes to play in LA and he has greatest games. He goes to play in New York, has his best games. He likes to play in front of the crowd.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of the other men and what was going on in there. And
I was going to say, so Like, I've never really warmed to Yannick Sinner, you know, mostly because just his play style kind of leaves me a little bit cold. I do love him, the way he hits that little kick backhand that he hits. Beautiful. And I wish I could do that. But one of the things that kind of endeared me to him, so his mom was there. His dad wasn't there. You know why?
Mm.
His dad had to work. His dad's a cook at a restaurant and he had a shift.
Okay.
That's wild. Uh-huh. Anyway, I thought that was, it's just weird thing where like Lindsay Davenport's parents weren't there when she won Wimbledon.
Well, and I know there's a big rumor, everybody, because the new Pope, Pope Leo, is a big tennis fan. He plays tennis. Yeah.
Both Catholic.
Well, and they said a lot of people thought he was going to be there. And it was like, ooh, is that going to be an advantage for Sinner because the Pope is
Italian?
But the Pope's not. Pope's from not Chicago.
Right.
So,
but Alcaraz and Sinner, I think, are both Catholic. No.
I'm sure down the road we'll see. He just became Pope.
I'm sure Pope Leo can't, you know, put the finger on the scale if they're both Catholic.
He's got to still be a little humble.
Now, if he was playing a Protestant,
yeah, that'd be a totally sure. different story. All right, Djokovic.
Yeah.
So he
made the semifinal,
right,
and was competitive for three sets against Sinner. Sinner didn't blow him away. It wasn't like 6-0, 6-1, 6-2.
But you just said it right there. Three sets.
Sure.
But
a competitive three sets.
I guess my question to you right now, and we're going to talk more about Djokovic in the second half near the end.
I think he beat Zverev.
Well, good.
Who's a very good clay court player.
Is Djokovic just now the third best tennis player in the world?
Yeah. Yes. I think so.
I mean, it's sad. He started his run essentially being the third best, and now he's going to end it being the third best. I know I saw a few names. I saw some American men up there again.
Yeah.
But they're getting...
Yeah, Paul had a decent tournament. Mm-hmm. Tiafo had a good tournament.
I really like Francis Tiafo, but I just...
Everybody likes Francis Tiafo.
I think he's going to be... top 10 player, not top 5 player.
Yeah, yeah. I think Francis is going to have... I don't know that Francis has the discipline that a guy like Fritz or Paul has, right? Francis is going to... But Francis has brilliant shot-making ability, mm-hmm. and he's so charismatic, and he can work the crowd and really use that crowd energy for it. He's the kind of guy that comes alive under the lights in New York. He played Alcaraz tough last Wimbledon. I think it was a quarter or a semi. It was quarter. And he he played, like, I remember Tiafo said in a press conference before that, he said, I'm coming for him. And then Alcaraz, that big puppy grin on his face, well, tell him I'm coming for him too.
Wow.
Tiafo can give these guys a run, but it's, can you put it together for 7, Matt? I don't know that he can.
Well, and I don't care for Zverev. He's a dirtbag, but
he is a dirtbag.
These group of guys that we're talking about. So you went through an era. Andy Roddick, he won one major title, and he won it when he was young. And didn't he win it before Federer won a title?
No, Federer won Wimbledon, and then he won the U.S. Open that year.
Yeah. Okay, so Federer won like 2 months before him or whatever. Yeah. But then those guys, I mean, Roddick, I think, being the head of that. I mean, Andy Murray was able to break through for a little bit. But
Andy Murray was way better than Andy Roddick.
No, fine. My point is, everybody, they always talk about the big three, and then Andy Murray,
yeah,
and I know you, and I know you've said even those guys consider Andy Murray part of their group.
He was at Rafa's retirement ceremony.
So, and maybe we should, but the general people, they talk about the big three. They talk about Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic.
Yeah.
And now, is it the last 5 titles have been won by either Alcaraz or Sinner?
Last six. The last title won by, the last major won by somebody other than that
was Djokovic.
Djokovic, a 2023 U.S. Open. Because Sinner won in Australia. Sinner won the 2 hard court slams last year, and Alcaraz won the 2 natural surfaces.
And I know this is the first time they played each other. We talked about that.
In a final,
right. So we know
they've
that.
They had some intense semis in court, yeah.
So I know each of them has beaten other people, and you could say mainly Zverev. I know he's lost a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say, you know, maybe put one of them in, but you're talking about 22-year-old guy who was his fifth title?
Fifth.
And a 23-year-old guy who just played in the final for his fourth title?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we looking at 10 years of these two just trading?
Maybe. I mean, there is another generation, right? There's Jakub Mensik and João Fonseca, who have maybe could compete with them. I think it's interesting, Jack Draper came in as a fifth seed, right? And played really well, but he got rolled by Sinner.
I mean, again, I'm not saying each of them, because I know Alcaraz has had some
injuries. Rolled by Sinner or Alcaraz? I want to say Sinner. I forgot. Jack Draper lost to Sasha Bublik. That was, yeah, you probably don't know who Bublik is.
I don't, but.
Yeah, Bublik is, he's an interesting player to watch.
For me, I was telling this to Ty. I always think of these major tournaments for like casual fans. The first week is like the first 2 weeks of the NCAA tournament. There's these, oh, there's that player. Oh, there's that. We're going to talk about one of them in a moment here. But we know they're not going to win the title. So we get excited when we watch. That's why, of course, I follow the American players because I'm an American. But I know neither of them are going to be there at the end.
Sure.
But it is, from what I saw, and again, from what everybody says, it is considered one of the greatest matches because it was extremely well-played tennis. And a lot of people, I want to make this clear, a lot of people might say that Sinner choked it.
No.
But
he didn't. No. He was broken early in the fifth set and he got the break back, right? He pushed that thing to a tiebreaker and then Alcaraz played out of his mind for the first 7 points of that tiebreaker. I mean, there's not much you can, like I said, I think Sinner's average level is higher. I think Alcaraz's top level is higher. And the thing about Alcaraz is he likes that rivalry, right? I think he has mutual respect for Jannik Sinner, and I think he shows up for that. Alcaraz will throw in a stinker of a performance sometimes when it doesn't count. You know what I mean? But against his biggest rival with a trophy on the line, he's going to show up for that match.
I mean, of all people, it's weird how our relationships change. Like, outside of my own podcast that I listen to all the time because I edit them, I listen to Joe Walsh all the time, the former Congressman Joe Walsh, who 15 years ago, I thought was the worst person, one of the worst Americans ever. And now, sports-wise, I listen to Colin Cowherd, who 5 years ago, I thought was the worst ever. But something happened to him that he suddenly changed. And he actually said something that I thought was really, really good, that Sinner's going to be in almost every final for the next few years.
Yeah.
But the ones he has to play Alcaraz in, Alcaraz is going to win.
Maybe.
And I thought that was a great way of looking at it.
And like I said, it's because Sinner's base level is so high, but Alcaraz's peak level, I think, is a little bit higher.
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
All right. To finish off the men, you get these names of people, you see them during the tournament, and you're like, oh, I remember that, dude. It's a kind of the old Deadspin remember a guy. And
like, well, yeah, but they put Yvonne Lendl in Remember a Guy.
But every now and then I get a smile across my face when I see like Gael Monfils or something. I'm like,
Lamont. Who doesn't love Lamont? He's awesome.
But this was the end of the road for, is it Richard or Richard?
Richard
Gasquet.
Yes, it is.
You got anything to say?
Yeah, I mean, Gasquet, beautiful one-handed backhand, beautiful. He's one of those Frenchmen that can play on grass. I don't know why.
Can't they all play
They're
on grass?
They're all good on grass, and I don't really understand why.
I mean, who is it? Noah's the last Frenchman to win, and that was in the 70s or something?
Yeah.
Yannick Noah for you younger ones.
That's right. Isn't he Joachim Noah's dad?
Yeah. But even
throw that in for the youth.
Yeah, say even the youth probably don't know who that is.
Yeah, maybe not. No, so Gasquet, he's like the same age as Federer and Nadal, right? He came up with those guys, not Federer, with Djokovic, Nadal, Murray, right? They're all about the same age, and they all came up through juniors together. And Gasquet was talked about in that group, you know, as they were coming up as juniors. I think he's something like 0-60 against the big three. Like, I don't think he's ever won a match. I think the number of sets he's won is in the single digits. But this is a guy that's been out there grinding away for 20 years. He's made a career on the tour. And like I said, that backhand is a thing of beauty. He's got a beautiful one-handed backhand. And I wish him well. You know, I enjoyed watching him play, except when he was playing the big three. Well,
and what do they do at like Roland Garros? They give him like a piece of
They give
of
you
the
like
court.
A cross-section of the court that shows the different layers, which I think is kind of a cool trophy. Yeah.
Well,
Nadal did have his retirement ceremony.
Well, yes.
And they actually like, because they had already given him a statue, which I think I've told you before, I think you should wait till people are retired before you start building statues naming arenas. But since they had already given him a statue, and it's like the Mr. Rogers statue, I think it's ugly.
Yeah, I know. It looks terrible.
But they put an impression of his footprint on Philippe Chatrier court. So,
I mean, he's dumb.
He's earned it. I mean, the guy's earned it, right?
I just kept hating getting all the commercials because it'd be close-ups of Nadal, and I'm like,
he looks old.
I still remember Nadal when he was like this punk ass kid that nobody could beat on.
He had his pirate pants.
Yeah, and I was like, this is when you see somebody that you watch that you used to think was a kid is old, that means you're old.
Yeah.
Hello, all. This is RD, and I wanted to come in and say this episode of the Ex Millennial Man podcast is sponsored by our Patreon. Go to patreon.com and look up Ex Millennial Man podcast. You go there to help support Ty and I support the show, but it also, we're bringing out some exclusive content here for our patrons. So please come on over. Also, I have some ideas for maybe a few giveaways, because don't you all want to be rocking your Ex Millennial Man t-shirt, beanie, hat, whatever it may be. And also, the show is brought to you by Public Form Productions. That's a network of podcasts that the Ex-Millennial Man is part of, along with First Watch Rewatch, High Heels and Politics, and then coming soon, A History of the 1980 Satanic Panic. So again, patreon.com, Ex-Millennial Man, Public Form Productions. Thank you, and let's get back to the conversation. Okay, Tina, I usually like to be kind because, honestly, I think it's more interesting tennis to talk about ladies tennis right now, but we had to keep the men first because that was hell of a match.
We're not at Wimbledon. We're still men's and women's.
Okay, is it?
It's only Wimbledon where they do gentlemen and ladies.
Oh, that's BS, but it's only because our son is in high school, and high school sports are boys and girls. College sports are men and women. Mm-hmm. So that's how I just tend to anything beyond high school. Having said that, We talked about the men because I had this great match and stuff like that. But let's not forget, okay, Sinner was number one, Alcaraz was number two.
Yep.
In the women's final, you had the number one player and the number two player going up against each other.
This is the first time that this has happened at any major since 2013.
Wow.
And the first time it's happened in Paris since like 1984.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't shock me. It always seems like somebody makes a weird run at the French Open.
Yep.
But you had the top two women's players, and they played a three-setter.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good match. It was also a very good match.
Yeah, and it was Sabalenka.
It's an argument for best of five for women, too.
It is. And Sabalenka, who has kind of been on fire, she lost in Australia, but she won the U.S. Open, right?
Yep.
So she's
and she had won the previous two Australian Opens.
So. She lost to a filthy American. And
again.
Yeah. An American woman has not won the French Open in like 80 years, or I don't know what they said, 10 years.
10 years. Which, you know, I'm like, it's not really that long. Here's the thing. Sabalenka has now lost three major finals to Americans because she lost two to Goff and one to Keys.
Well, Coco Gauff, who, I think if people go back on this podcast before, I've said, when is she going to win something? And that's when she was like 20?
No, that's when she was like 17.
Okay. And then she won
she's
something.
She's 20 now.
Okay. And then she won something. And now I'm like,
or maybe she's 21 now. I did see her drinking champagne, but she was in France. So who knows?
But she won. And then it's like, okay, when's she going to win her next one? Well, she won her next one.
Yeah.
Down the set, came out. And unlike the men, it looked like she absolutely murdered her in that third set.
Yeah. And
I shouldn't say murder. It looked like an inevitability. They got into that third set.
Yeah.
And it just looked like she was going to win.
Yep. Yep. So Sabalenka is really good on clay. But you know who else is really good on clay?
Coco Gauff.
This
wasn't she in the final last year?
2 years ago.
Okay.
This is her second final. Was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
I've seen she's up there a lot.
Yeah. So this is her second French Open final. She's also very good on clay. And Sabalenka, a little salty after the match. I think right after.
Did she pull some like clay in her eyes or something like that? Or?
Oh, that was Alcaraz who had the clay in his eyes. Okay. So right after the match during the trophy ceremony, she said, I'm sorry I played so terrible. Okay, you know what? It's 5 minutes after you just lost a heartbreaker of a match.
I told you this, that I think it sucks that after all of that, you have to sit there.
Yep.
It just sucks. Okay?
Yep. You usually see the non-winner. I'm not going to say loser. You usually see the non-winner sitting there with a towel over their head crying, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah, no,
so again, I'm going to cut her some slack for what she said right after. Then she went to the press room and said, I didn't win because Coco played great. I didn't lose because Coco played great. I lost because I played really, really badly. And Iga would have come out and won today against Coco.
And well, that's not who Coco Gauff was playing.
Not only that, Coco beat Iga in Rome like 6-1, 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, which Coco pointed out during her press conference, which I appreciate. You got to give some. It's, and again, I have never really warmed to Sabalenka because she is kind of like this. Serena was like this, though. Mm-hmm. Serena would never give Justine Henin credit for being able to beat her. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sabalenka thinks, if I play well, I beat anybody, right? I think what that doesn't account for is the way that Coco Gauff plays is disruptive to a player like Sabalenka. Gauff is up there with the fastest players I've ever seen in my life. I mean, we're talking Graf, Leighton Hewitt, Andy Murray. These are some of the fastest people I've ever seen, and Gauff is right up there with them. I mean, she is really, really fast. And what that does is it shrinks the court, right? And it means that you have to go for winners, or you have to go for smaller margins, right? I would say if Serena Williams was playing me, she wouldn't make any unforced errors because she doesn't have to try and do. If I was playing you, I wouldn't make any unforced errors.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. So, but if I'm playing somebody who is my equal or slightly better than me, or even as good as me, but even a little bit faster than me, it's going to put a lot of pressure on me to hit smaller and smaller targets. And I'm going to make more errors, which is why we should really think about what an unforced error is. It's becoming as useless a stat as win-loss, right?
Mm-hmm. Win-loss in baseball.
For pitchers. Yeah.
Yeah. Win-loss in tennis does mean something.
It still matters. Yeah, right. Again, I'm not going to hit any unforced errors against you because I don't have to. And Sabalenka hit an appalling number of unforced errors. She hit 70 unforced errors, right? But to say that that's not because of who was on the other side of the net is absurd. Coco is so fast that she not only shrinks the court left to right, right? But she's also very quick at moving forward, right? She moves forward better than almost any. And quickness is not just about raw foot speed. That's part of it, right? But part of it is anticipation, getting the first step off. And the other part of it, especially on clay, is understanding how to move, right? You have to understand how to stop on clay so that you can go back the other way quickly. And Coco moves incredibly well and just makes the court that much smaller. And I think that, so there's that. I think that frustrates Sabalenka, right? So because she is going for smaller and smaller targets, which then she winds up missing some of them, right? And then it gets in her head. And the other thing that Coco does better than anybody else, right? And I remember thinking this during the famous U.S. Open semifinal where the guy glued himself to the stadium. She focuses,
mm-hmm.
right? It was like that U.S. Open final she played against Sabalenka, right? She lost the first set. Okay, that's not going to bother me. I can still win this match. And she's just really, really good at regrouping and focusing and playing the next point. Like Rafael Nadal was really good at that, right? Just really short memory. Once a point was over, it was over. It was in the past and we're not going to think about it anymore. And I don't know if that's exactly how Coco approaches things. But yeah, just the mental fortitude is incredible.
Well, you had brought up Iga Swiatek, who at the beginning of the tournament, I told you, I think she's going to win. But she's had not a great year.
She's not had a great year.
She came in seated fifth, I think.
Yeah, which sucks because then you're
in
a quarter. That means that you might be in Gauff's quarter. Yeah. It might be in Sabalenka's quarter. Right?
And she was murdering people, just mowing them down.
Yes. Yeah.
And then was it Sabalenka that beat her?
Sabalenka beat her, and it was three.
Yeah.
It was three sets. But that was still not quite the Iga that won four out of the last five Roland Garros.
Just the players got better? Does she have something to figure out?
I think she's got some things to figure out. I don't think she has the confidence that she had before. she used to actually play with a lot more variety. And then she started playing a lot more bassline-y and got to number one and stayed there for a while playing that way. So you can't really falter. But I think that she should try and get some of that variety and feel back.
Well, I think she should go to dental school like her parents and sister. Because wasn't she going to do that if tennis didn't work out?
She said she was going to go to college if tennis didn't work out. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. We'll see. She's never really had a great grass season. Now you can say that's because she's
doesn't care.
Well, not even that. It's really hard to prepare for grass when you're playing the entire tournament at Roland Garros, right?
No, yeah, there is that.
So not everybody's Novak Djokovic just roll up and win the title, right? Especially if you don't know how to move the grass. Yeah, again, I've never played on grass. I have played on clay. I think
there's grass courts in St. Louis.
No.
Yeah.
Where?
At some rich person country club? Actually, I think it's at St. Louis Country Club, but I'm almost positive they're grass courts.
The only time I've been on a grass court was when I went up to the Tennis Hall of Fame in Rhode Island.
Well, we got to go become members of the St. Louis Country Club. So.
Okay. Or we could just, you know, go on vacation to England.
Yes. Okay. Well, it's probably cheaper.
Or you can the court at the International Tennis Hall of Fame is public. You can book it. It's like a couple $100 an hour.
You've got a big birthday coming up in about a year and a half, and I've thought of a few things.
I'm going to be 30.
Yep, that's right. You're going to be the new 30.
The new 30, right.
Well, somebody said that Generation X is, we all think we're in our 20s, we all look like we're in our 40s, and we all sleep like we're in our 70s.
It's probably true. So anyway, we'll see what Iga does on the grass. I think you didn't ask me for prediction, but I think Sabalenka is going to win Wimbledon.
Well, no, we'll get there.
Okay.
So, because I want to talk about my favorite story of the whole thing is, and this is going to show my ignorance at the beginning. When I first saw the name Louise Boisson.
Louise Boisson.
I thought it was a dude. Not because I saw her, but I'm like, oh, some French dude's making a run. I'm like, no, some French lady's making a run.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She went to the semis? Is that? Good for her.
And
I'd never heard of her before.
This is her first main draw appearance at any major.
Oh, geez. Good for her.
Yeah.
In front of her home crowd.
Yeah. No, she, and she was like, she wasn't playing nobody. She destroyed Pegula. Right. Mira Andreeva was like, I think the sixth seed. And Andreeva is like a teenage phenom that everybody that is already really good. She's already the sixth seed. Right. And everybody's like, and she destroyed Andreeva. It's incredible. You know, Goff took her apart. So, you know, again, in the semis. But yes,
it's like when some like some little school, Davidson State or whatever.
St. John's.
Is in like the, well, St. John's used to be good, but still.
Not St. John's. Who? St. Peter.
Yeah.
Who beat Purdue?
Oh, yeah. That Jersey school.
Yeah.
The New Jersey City school. But yeah, you'll see them. You'll see one of these schools and then they'll get to like the Elite Eight and they're playing Duke. And
yes.
Duke beats them by 40. Right. So no.
But again, she was playing like North Carolina when she's out there with Andreeva and Pegula, right?
No, good for her. No, that was pretty cool. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah.
Would you say, though, between the men?
She came into the tournament ranked 361 in the world. She's now the top ranked French woman.
Hey, good for her.
She's like up to 60 something.
Awesome. We'll see how
And I think they've already cut off the entry requirements for Wimbledon, but I hope she gets a wild card.
Yeah.
You got to give her a wild card at this point,
right? Let her in.
Especially since the only time I had ever heard of Louise Boisson before that was Harriet Dart, who's a British player, like sometime over the winter was complaining to the chair umpire that Boisson smelled bad.
Oh, because the French smoke and don't use deodorant.
That's right. And so it was some British on French violence there. And, you know,
I'm waiting. I can hear
so
the keyboards.
So you have to let Louise Boisson play at Wimbledon.
You do. You
just
do.
On the off chance that she might draw Harriet Dart.
I'm going to put that in my book to watch. So we had the big long break between Australia and the French Open. We had, I mean, the best matchup you possibly could have in both the men's and the women's final.
Yeah.
Both of them went the distance. The men's even went extra distance. They played a little extra time for us. And now in what, like 4 days, we are at Wimbledon.
So the women's tournament at Queen's Club has already started. I think the men have got maybe, well, Holly's usually the same week. I don't know, but the men's tournament at Queen's Club will be after that. And, you know, middle weekend of Wimbledon is usually July 4th.
So we're right there. And before I get into all that stuff, a couple of stories I wanted to talk about is you have on here
Kazakina.
Yeah. Is Australian. That's not an Australian name.
No, Kazakina is she's a Russian by birth. Mm-hmm. Right. She came out of the closet like 5 years ago.
That's not very good for Russian.
Which means that she could never go home or back to Russia.
Well, she would be executed, but yes.
Right. I noticed I was watching a Kazakina match and they still don't put up flags for Russian and Belarusian players. And I noticed there was an Australian flag next to Kazakina's name. So she has...
Does she have a family member?
She lives there.
Now. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey, good for her.
I mean, I think her partner might be Australian, but I'm not sure.
I say good for her. I mean, that's...
She's been very outspoken about... Even when she was playing Alina Svitolina, right? And Svitolina was saying that she won't shake hands with Russian players. It was cool at this tournament because they were shaking hands again with Kazakina, because Kazakina has been very supportive of them.
Even though I talked about the Pope, I'm not a very religious person. So I hope the best for her, because live your life. That's the most important thing.
And Kazakina is a fun player to watch. If you've never, you know, she's another one of these creative type of players, which is always fun to watch.
On a completely different note, no line judges. Now, I noticed this again watching that final, so I'm the ignorant one here, but and we're going to talk about the TNT of it all in a moment, but they were showing the replay, but I'd said to you, I didn't think they had replay here.
This is the last year.
So they will have it next year.
This is the last year that they have actual human line judges at any, so everybody else has already gotten rid of them.
Yeah. And right. I understand that, but it's pretty damn obvious on the clay at Roland Garros if the ball's in or out.
Yeah, but it's probably way more expensive to pay actual humans to sit there and go, So
I blame David Zaslav for this. Because I blame him in particular, because HBO Max, and then Max, now HBO Max,
right,
has the rights to Roland Garros, to the French Open.
Yes, well, Warner Brothers Discovery or whatever they're called.
Well, they're breaking apart now, so I don't know which one's going to get them in a divorce. But it is now, this is, where it was on NBC forever.
It was on Tennis Channel and NBC.
Yeah. But now it's strictly a WB joint.
Yep.
And you can watch it on Max, HBO Max, not HBO Max or whatever.
Yep.
While when you're dumb, they'll tell you, hey, you should watch Bill Maher. It's like, I'm never going to watch Bill Maher. So you've got it there.
Well, they were telling me that I should watch the not Sex in the City.
Oh, yeah. But you are watching that.
But I'm hate-watching.
I say not happily
watching
it. But I'm hate-watching
it.
I know. I sit downstairs and you're like, ah! What are your impressions of the whole TNT HBO Max of it all?
So I find that I don't enjoy the pick any court as much as I do on ESPN Plus, because on ESPN Plus, they don't even cut to commercials. So you get to see people argue with the chair umpire, right? And that's kind of, you know, you get to see people dancing in the stands, and that's kind of fun. Not HBO made me still watch commercials. So I wasn't crazy.
Yeah, because I kept seeing that Nadal commercial over and over again.
Right. So I wasn't crazy about that. Otherwise, it was fine. Now, there was this incredibly annoying dude on the anchor desk sitting there with Lindsay Davenport and Jim Courier and Andre. They got Andre.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
Steffi won't show her face anymore, but he'll pop up every
day. Yeah. She's always been more camera shy than him. But they had some Jamote who, like, I mean, Chris Fowler was a college football guy, but he's been covering tennis long enough that I begrudgingly admit that he knows what he's talking about, right? This dude kept saying Wimbledon.
Like my mother.
Well, but I'm not going to correct your mother. It's not your mother's job to know these things.
Yes, yeah.
It's this dude's job to know. did Courier or whoever, or McEnroe or anybody never actually just go, dude, it's a D, not a T.
I'm sure they did off camera.
Right, but he did it
again.
It.
No, I know. He did it again.
Like, what are you doing, man?
Well, you'll be back into the glorious embrace of ESPN here pretty soon.
But I do hate Chris Fowler.
Before we get to predictions, and that we've, again, you look at the life of this. We did this a few years ago with Serena. And I said it in the first half, is Djokovic the third best tennis player in the world? Is he done? Is there not another one there? He can't beat Alcaraz in center. He can't.
Yeah, I mean, he's played Alcaraz the last 2 years in the Wimbledon final.
And he's lost them both.
That became obvious, yeah. Right?
Is his last big win that Cincinnati win?
Yeah, I mean, he won the U.S. Open the year before that.
Yeah, but...
No, the Olympics.
Oh, no, you're right. I just talked about that, actually, last week, yeah.
Yeah, so he beat Alcaraz in the Olympics. Now, that's best of three,
mm-hmm.
Right? But that match was an incredibly high-level match. Now, he's a year older now, mm-hmm. from that. But he still made the semis.
He right? did.
And grass is...
More forgiving.
A little more forgiving because faster surface, and you're not going to grind out these points in the same way. He knows how to play on grass. His incentive is that he can knock off Federer's last remaining record, which is 8 Wimbledons, and Djokovic has 7 right now. Right? And I have to think that he wants to do that. He did, by winning the tournament in Geneva a couple of weeks ago, he won his 100th title. So he's now won 100 career titles. I don't know. I mean, there could be one more magical run in him because unlike when Federer retired.
He was done.
He wasn't in the top 10.
Yeah.
Right. He wasn't playing like a top 10 player anymore. When Murray retired, he wasn't playing like a top 10 player anymore. Right. And Djokovic is still in the top 5 at least.
Let me put it this way. Do you think he could win if he doesn't have to play Sinner or Alcaraz on the way to the title?
Absolutely.
So right. There's still...
The problem is that they're going to be 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Which means that there is an excellent possibility you're going to have to play both of them. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this was the problem when there was a big four, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were guaranteed to have to play 2 out of... Federer, Nadal, Murray, Djokovic, you're going to have to get through 2 of them, not just 1 of them, 2 of them to win anything, right? And Djokovic not being one of the top 2 seeds could have to go through both of them.
Well, here's my wild prediction.
Now, that would be the absolute crowning glory.
Oh, yeah. No.
To win a Wimbledon title after playing both of them.
My wild prediction is I think...
But there's other guys who could, like, Shelton could have a very good run at Wimbledon.
Right. Is he going to beat Alcaraz or Sinner?
No, but he could beat Djokovic.
Okay.
Right? There's people that can play on grass, right? Musetti had a great clay tournament, and he's pretty good on grass.
Well, look, I think Djokovic has 3 more tournaments in him, major tournaments. I think he has Wimbledon, U.S. Open, and I think he will play in Australia.
I actually would not be surprised if he skipped the U.S. Open.
My thought is, regardless of what happens, I think his last major tournament is going to be the next Australian Open.
Maybe.
I mean, and he still may be really good. He still may be up there. But again, you get a lot of these elite athletes that it's like, if I can't win. Now, in those 3 tournaments, I think he wins one. And I think it may be this Wimbledon.
I think I think this Wimbledon is his best shot.
Because
Jannik Sinner on hard court.
Well, and it's
tall,
yeah, fine, but it's,
tall
it's
order.
You have these 2 guys, Sinner and Alcaraz, who just went through this grueling tournament, and maybe they will be good, but I think this is Djokovic's
maybe,
best chance.
But they're also children, which means that they bounce back a little bit quicker than.
How about the women? I mean, is who's Sab-
if you made me bet one player, I'd bet Sabalenka, but I wouldn't take her over the field.
Okay, who's she gonna lose to then in the final again?
Goff. No, Goff's forehand's gonna be more rushed on the grass than on the clay. Andreeva, very, very good.
Can somebody like Ann Jabeur break through? Can
I don't know. Jabeur's been battling injuries. She hasn't been that
good lately.
I've
been hearing that for like years.
Yeah, well, since that final she lost to
Paolini. I know it was another one.
Paolini was in the final last year. Mm-hmm. Two previous years, some random Czech one.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was Krejcikova and Vondrousova, right?
Well, the American women have won the last two, so.
American women have won. Keys, you know, again, I.
And Keys
I'm
had
not,
a pretty good French Open.
She did. Yes, she did. And she can play on grass, too. Mm-hmm. Rybakina played Swiatek really tough, really tough. That was a good match from Rybakina, and she's won the tournament before.
Well, I assume Coco Gauff's going to be seeded first.
No, I think Sabalenka
she'll
be
still be
one.
Okay.
But being seeded second is basically the same as being seeded first, right? Yeah. It's not as a practical matter. It's not any different. It's hard to say. I don't think Swiatek is going to have that figured out by Wimbledon. I would not be shocked if Mira Andreeva made a big run.
Well, you know we'll what? See? We're going to know in a few weeks.
We will know in a few weeks. Maybe Loïc Boisson will also make a big run.
She's going to be my Robin Soderling. I'm going to remember her forever now.
So I saw somebody.
And she's probably better than Soderling, but still.
Somebody was saying that for Nadal's retirement ceremony, I forget who was saying this. I think I heard it on the tennis podcast. They were saying that they should have all the people that he beat be an honor guard for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he's beaten you more than once, you should have to get out of line and run back down. And at the very end, you just have Robin Soderling drift in.
Hell yeah. Go Robin Soderling. All right. Well, that's it for this this edition of Talkin' Tennis. And you have wisely decided that social media is stupid. So I understand that. You guys want to yell. You know where the comments are. You can come yell. You know the email. You can come yell. Trust me, they never yell about you. They're like, why do you sit with this moron that talks about tennis? So,
well, at least you don't say Wimbledon.
I used to.
Yeah. But I wouldn't have married you if you still said it.
Well, with all that being said, we thank you for your ears. Anything else that you use to listen to the X Millennial Band podcast? Remember, we're here every Saturday for free, wherever you find your fine podcasting shows. I've already talked on a few podcasts that schedule's going to be a little weird, a little bit different, but we do have already a few podcasts in the hopper. And I encourage you all that I know Ty and I have done the hot takes a couple of times. Well, we're going to let our sons do the next hot takes, and that's coming in a few weeks. And I have no idea what they're going to talk about, but...
Are you going to understand it?
I'm just going to tell you, if I hear system receiver, I might break in because I'm still going to be the moderator of it. But... All right, say goodbye to the good folks.
Goodbye.
Kshana kshana sa pujile athang swapna lochani kana kana ta dekhile tuse swarup darpani.
The X Millennial Man podcast is a production of seedsane.com. Fully owned by R.D. Kulik & Associates, LLC. Producers Ty Kulik and Ryan Kulik. Adequately engineered by Ryan Kulik.